We're holding in Yerushalmi Tainis, page 30, Oisavin. So we're in the middle of talking about the subject of much of the beginning of Masechta Tainis is about the fasts that they would do when there wasn't rain and the special Seder of them. One thing the Mishnah mentions is that when they had, they would bring out the Sefer Torah, they would bring out the Aron with the Sefer Torah into the suite, and they would daven there, they would put ashes on the heads of the Nasi and the Avesin, and they had a whole thing over there that was meant in order to make people feel bad, to break their hearts, so that they would do sincere tshuva. And part of it also, the Mishnah mentions that somebody would say that a Zokin Shebehen, ideally an elder of the Kehillah, would say Divrei Kibushin, would say words that are meant to press on their hearts and to get them to do tshuva. So the Gemara brings Amar Reb Shimon Levi, Steve, the aid Yalam in Aretz, where we have in last week's parasha, an aid came up from the earth and watered the whole surface of the earth. So in the simple meaning, aid means a mist. So Hashem made a mist of clouds come up from the earth as evaporation of water, and then from that came clouds from which rain fell. But Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Rish Lakish, is darshaning the word aid also can mean breakage. When it means breakage, it's spelt with a yud, aleph yud dalet. You have, for example, lefnei edehen shalav dikachavim at the beginning of Masechta Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara explains there that the word edehen, which means their chagas, is a word meaning their breakage. You know, they deserve to be broken for the Avodah Zarah they worship. So Rish Lakish is saying over here, it means ola sheva milamata, when breakage comes from below. In other words, when the Jewish people's hearts are broken and they're doing sincere tshuva, then miyadav shamim yodim, then right away the rain falls. So the aid, yalam in aretz, the aid, the breaking, comes up from the ground, yisurusa delasata, then immediately you have that rain falls and the whole earth is watered. Amr Berechia, so the Berechia says in a similar vein, Ksiv, from the other end of the Torah, here you have from Parshas Bereishis, now Berechia brings a similar thing from near the end of the Torah, from Parshas Hazinu. Ksiv, Yarif Kamotu Likhi, Moshe Rabbeinu says, my teaching should Yarif like the rain. So in the simple meaning, Yarif means to drip. But he understands Yarif as also Meloshen Oref, the back of the neck. Kofu Orpon L'tshuva, when the Jewish people bend the neck for tshuva. Now you often have in Tanakh, there's often the metaphor used, we also use it in davening, Kshei Oref, Am Kshei Oref, who, for example, that people are stiff-necked and stubborn, like they can't even turn their head to look back and see, is what I did correct? So now, when they do bend their neck to the yoke of the Eibishter, and they're willing to look back and see, you know what, we haven't been acting right, miyadag shamim yodim, then right away rain falls. So yarif, then the result is kamoto, that rain comes. So the Gemara tells you, Rabberechia obed tlas esvetanion, one time in Rabberechia's times there was a drought, so they had the 13 fasts in succession, as Mishnayos described, where they have first a set of three on Monday, Thursday, and Monday, then they wait a little bit and see if rain has fallen, if not, then they have the next set, and if not, then they have the next seven, and each one is more severe than the previous one. So altogether, the Mishnah describes the maximum you ever make for a lack of rain is 13 fasts. So here Rabberechia had gone through with his Kehillah, with all 13 of these fasts, v'lenochis mitra, and all that time rain didn't fall. And on top of that, there was sefer osa goybai. Then on top of that, after they had done all these 13 fasts, then a plague of locusts hit. Over omakumeha, instead of berechia, comes to give them a drosha, again, with the idea he realizes they obviously haven't done proper tshuva yet, which is why the Eibishter is hitting them with one disaster after another, so he was going to tell them a speech to get them to do tshuva. And he says in front of them, Achinon, our brothers, Chamu Madinun Abdin, look at what we're doing. Loy Dohi Dinevia Makantolon, aren't we doing exactly the kind of thing that the Novi criticizes us for? Namely, you have a couple of psukim in the Novi Micha, one of Tereyasa, that goes as follows. First, let's read the words of the pasuk as they are, and then Reb Berechia is going to douch in them phrase by phrase. Al hara kapayim lahetiv, people are doing for evil purposes. They're taking with their hands and expecting to get good out of it, like they're bribing, figuring that they can get favors that way. The minister, the government minister, is asking for a bribe, and the judge is also involved in the bribery, in the payment. The great person, the great leader, meaning even maybe the Talmud Chacham, is speaking what he wants. Havas Nafshei, it actually explains on the pasuk over there, meaning something like what he wants to happen in his desire. Vayabsuha, and they make it into an avois, into like a braid, a thickly braided thing, like you have three people involved over here, it's very hard to untangle it. Then the next pasuk continues, tovam kechedek, their good ones are like thorns. Kechedek can mean most of the mafarshim on the pasuk explain that chedek or chedek, whatever, is a type of thorn. There's also an explanation that it means like a crack in a wall. Yoshim Mesucha, the ones who are straight, who are supposed to be the straightest among them, are also like a Mesucha, like a hedge of thorns. In other words, once you get tangled up with them, it's very difficult to untangle yourself. Yoim Mitzapechab Kudos Chaba, the day that you expected your visitation, your remembrance from Hashem in a negative way is going to come. Ata Siach Risam, now is going to be their end. So another is saying, in short, that the whole society, or a good part of it, is corrupt, and therefore the Eibishter is going to punish them. So now the Berechia uses those two psukim as the basis for his drosha to the people. By the way, there's a Gemara, the Bavli in Eiruvin brings the flip side of it, that the Gemara mentions over there that a min one time says to, I think, Rav Chanina, he says, you tzaddikim, you see that your own Navi compares you to no better than thorns and thistles, dangerous things. And Rav Chanina explains to him, no, that's not what the pasuk. The deeper meaning of the pasuk is that the tzaddikim are like thorns to the rishoyim. That the Eibishter, when the Eibishter judges the rishoyim, he says, why weren't you like the tzaddikim of your time? And therefore they wind up in Gehenna. And Yoshim and Mesucha, the straight people, the upright people, protect us like a hedge protects a field. But in the simple meaning of the pasuk, it's meant as a negative thing. And Rav Chanina was taking it in that way also. So he says, when the pasuk says, for evil, they're stretching out their hands expecting to get good, meaning exactly that. So it means, like, here we're doing badly to one another with our hands, whether it means people are hitting each other, whether it means that people are stealing from each other, whatever kinds of avedas that are done with the hands. And we're asking for goodness from Eibishter. What kind of fasts are these? He continues, Asar Shoyal, the minister is asking, what is he asking? Where's a good place to get bribes? And when the pasuk continues, the judge is also on the take. The judge says, fine, shalom leave, shalom loch. You pay me a bribe this time, and I'll judge in your favor. And next time I'll pay you, and you'll judge in my favor. So they have a whole quid pro quo thing going on over here. Any resemblance to certain government policies nowadays is not accidental. Anyway, the pasuk continues, the great one speaks what he wants, his desire, who, vayabasuha, and they make it thick, which means avdua avya, they make it thick, like they make it, they're all in this as a thick bundle, which is very hard to undo. Avdua Kliya Dechoven. They make it like a braid of Avedas. Like a braid is very hard to undo and it's very strong and not so easy to snap. Alderach, like you have in the positive sense. The positive says, V'achota Meshulot, Leibim Heiri Yenosik, that a triple thread is much harder to snap. So here it's the other way around. They have like this triple, they have this triple bond between the different corrupt leaders, and the result is that it's very hard to undo it. So you have to ask who is going to cut it? Who's going to cut through that rope and get things back to normal? The problem is, as the next pasuk continues, tovam kechedek, the good ones are like a chedek, meaning tovah de b'chayim keilin chidkaya. Even the best, the ones who are supposed to be the best in the kehillah, are no better than the thorns. So you expect, you could say, in other words, they have the sharpness, they have the ability to cut through these ropes of corruption, but they themselves are like thorns, which make things even worse, and you try to tangle with them, and you end up the worst for it. Yoshim Mesucha, the straight ones are no better than a hedge. Same thing. Yashua Debahin, Kilim Sukhaya. So the ones who are supposed to be the straightest among them, the most upright and honest, are like a hedge of thorns, where again, it's very dangerous to tangle with them. Yom Mitzapecha, he continues with the lashon of the pasuk, the day that you expect, kudos chaba, instead your punishment comes, meaning, Rebbe Rachi is saying, Yom Shitzipinu L'Ravacha, here we were expecting that we're finally going to have relief after all our fasts and our tefillos and everything, we're expecting the Eibishter is finally going to grant us rain, instead, Baalenu Goybai, instead, now we have locusts on top of that. So he finishes off with the pasuk, The end of the pasuk after tiyah mevuchosam now is going to be mevuchosam. So in the simple meaning of the pasuk mevuchosam means they're confusion. Like now, after all this, is when they're going to be confused and realize they have what they've done wrong. But he understands mevuchosam meloshen bechia, meloshen crying. So he says min goyd inen baichan oy kaiven, when the people are crying or when they're hurt. In other words, he's explaining mevuchosam kind of has a double meaning. It could be meloshen bechia and also meloshen ke'ev. They're crying from pain when people are ready to actually cry out to the Eidishter and to feel the pain and to feel how bad things have gotten. That's when the Eidishter will have a rachmanis on us. Sure enough, vochon, that caused everybody to cry from his teuchacha, the nochas mitra, and rain fell. Okay. Further on, the Mishnah mentions that a typical drasha. The Mishnah gives an example that the Gadol Shebehem would mention. For example, look at what happened with Anshei Nineveh. We just read it on Yom Kippur a couple of weeks back. So here they did a massive tshuva movement when Yonah came and threatened the city is going to be overturned. And what does the pasuk say? It doesn't say that the Eidosha saw a sack on Vestan Nisam, their sackcloth and their fasting, even though the pasuk does describe they did all those things. It says, Vayara lekinas maaseim, the Eidosha saw their actions, kishovim vidat mara, that they did tshuva from their evil ways. So therefore, so the Zokin Shebehem uses that as part of his Dinosha to say that in the same way, the Eibishter is not so interested in your sackcloth and your fasting. What he's interested in is your sincere tshuva. So Amar of Shimon Levi, so the Shlokish points out, you should realize, tshuva sharamos osu anshe Nineveh. The people of Nineveh actually did a trickster kind of tshuva. In other words, now we don't mean, as Yosef points out, they did do an honest tshuva in the sense they did actually, as the pasuk goes on to say, they did return us a chomas hashev kapeim, all the stolen goods that they had stolen and everything. But what he means is, in other words, that they're using like a trick in order to, so to speak, to force the Eibishter into forgiving them. The Bavli mentions this also in the sugya as well. We learned about it in Ein Yaakov at the time. So ma'al, so what they do, Rav Chuna b'shem Rav Shimon Chalasta, hamidu agolim b'fnim, they took some calves and put them in the inside of a building, the imaseyim b'chutz, and kept the mothers of those calves on the outside of the building, or similarly, siochim b'fnim v'imaseyim b'chutz, and they did the same thing with the baby horses, and the mother horses. So each one, the babies are making noises, mooing and neighing and whatever, missing their mothers, and the mothers miss their babies. Amrin, so now the people of Nineveh were saying to Hashem, if you don't have Rachmanos on us, less than Merachmin Aleihem, then we're not going to have Rachmanos on them either. So like, so to speak, they forced the Eidosh's hand. Thus, you have a pasuk that expresses this idea in connection with the plague of locusts that hit in Yoel's times, which we learned about a couple of times in Ein Yaakov. So you have Yoel has the expression, manencho behema. Look how much even the animals are sighing, navoichu edre bakar v'gomer, and the herds of cattle are confused. So simple pshat is, in other words, because there's no grain, there's no grass and no hay for anything. So like they're sighing and confused, like we're like why aren't our masters feeding us? But we understand, in other words, that it means that. In that case, then the Navi was saying that the Navi was saying to the people, even if you're not deserving of the Eidishter should help you, at least he'll help you in the schus of the animals, because what did they do wrong? So the same way the people of Nineveh are using that kind of concept, so to speak, to force Hashem's hand to have Rachmanis on them and not destroy the city. Amr of Acha, the Avi Abdin Kain, sort of Acha points out, you know, that kind of thing where the pasuk describes where they put sackcloths on the animals. So they do that kind of thing. He says they do that kind of thing in Arabia, where sometimes they put sackcloth on the animals. As the pasuk says, v'yiskasu sakam odim v'abehema v'yikru el elikim b'chazka. They should put all the people and the animals should wear sackcloth and cry out to Hashem strongly. So Rav Acha is pointing out, you should know, if you go to Arabia, you can find sometimes they do that kind of thing as well, where they put sackcloths on the animals, whether for mourning, whether for protection, whatever it is. Et Yosef points out also, the point is that the previous drosha about them keeping the mothers and the baby, the mother animals and baby animals apart, you might explain it that It might be explained differently. That when it says v'iskasu sakim ha'odom, you have to divide it up. V'iskasu sakim ha'odom. The people should clothe themselves in sackcloth, which is a typical thing that you find in Tanakh that people would do in times of trouble. As far as Rabbi Hema, not necessarily they're going to put sackcloth on the animals. Who does that? Rather, it means they're going to hide v'iskasu. They're going to hide the mothers and the babies from each other, as Rabbi Chuna explained. Whereas on the other hand, Rabbi Acha is saying, don't be so surprised that they put sackcloths on the animals. You can go to Arabia and you can find them do that kind of thing sometimes. Okay, so the pasuk says they called out to Hashem b'chozka strongly. Mao b'chozka, what's that expression in b'chozka, which implies in the Bavli, when it brings this also, Rashi explains over there, b'chozka suggests like with an unassailable argument, like with an argument that Hashem, so to speak, can't refute. So what kind of argument are they making? Omer of Shimon Chalafta, Chatsufa Notzach Luxeir. Even in the way it works among a boss of a dom, you often find that the chutzpah nyak wins out over the kosher. So, for example, you have a Kosev explains, it means, for example, if you have two women and one of them is more of a chutzpah nyak and the other one is an isha ksheira, who's more of an onav, very often the chutzpah nyak is going to win out over the ksheira. So she has more of the breakite to press her case. And the same way, more generally, a person may sometimes have the chutzpah and the breitkeit to ask for something that really he doesn't even deserve, and the kosher, Hashem, for example, who is the honor, will so to speak, give in and give it to him. So they say, kol sheken shetevasa shaloylam. That's even when you have a regular thing between, a regular argument between boss of Adam, how much more so over here, where it's for the good of the whole world, that Hashem should have rachmanus on us. So that's the chozka, like they're using an argument, almost like they're using the Ebishter, the way the Ebishter created the natural tendencies of people in the world, almost like they're using that to win out their argument against Hashem. So the pasuk continues that the king makes an announcement, v'yeshuvu ish midarka hara, every person should go back from their evil ways, and v'nachomas asher b'chapehem, and from the robbery that is in their hands. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan says, what's this in their hands? The robbery could be anywhere. It means what they actually had in their hands, they returned as part of this tshuva. But they didn't necessarily return any stolen goods that were in their boxes, that were in their closets or boxes or cabinets. They didn't necessarily return. And nevertheless, it was enough of a tshuva that the Eibishter accepted and deferred their punishment. The Bavli actually says almost what seems to be almost the opposite. The Bavli says that you have a case where a person might have stolen a beam and built it into his house, where technically you have the Ikar Adin, he would have to tear down the house and return the beam. The Chachamim made a takona, it's called takona sashovim, that instead of that, then a person is going to be very unlikely to do tshuva, so they allow him to return the monetary value of it. Here, the Bavli mentions the people of Nineveh would actually go that extra mile, and they would actually tear down their house to return the beam. So on the face of it, that seems kind of the opposite of what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, that they tried to get away with as little as possible. So, okay, maybe there's some way to be miyash of them. Maybe as far as tearing down their house to return the beam, where like they can make a big public spectacle of it and everybody's going to be impressed, that they would do, but to go and take something from their cabinet where they figure they can always claim that it wasn't there, maybe they'd try to get away with that.
Show offs,
basically, yeah. Alright. Ksiv, now in this connection, the pasuk says, in Yoel, again, you have the whole section in the Navi Yoel where he describes the plague of locusts that happened in his times and the massive gathering of tshuva that they had to cry and plead with the Eibishter and to do tshuva. So Yoel has the expression, and the Mishnah also quotes, that the Zokin Shebehem, when he says the Divrei Kibushim, he would mention the following pasuk, the Kiru Lovavchem Ba'al Begdechem, tear your hearts and don't tear your clothes. The Shuvu El Hashem Alekechem, and return to Hashem your God, Tichanun Verachem Hu, because he's moved merciful and kind, he's gracious and merciful. So what's this, the kiddul of Avchem Ba'al Begdechem? So in the simple sense, it means exactly that. Tear up the evil that's in your heart. Instead of doing the chitzonius that you're just going to tear your clothes in sadness for the famine, instead tear your heart, tear the evil out of your heart, the yetzahara that's in your heart. One thing that's bothering the Gemara, though, is where do we find specifically that for a drought, there's an inyan to tear your clothes? For a mess, Rahman al-Tlan, a person tears his clothes. For other things like that, where do we find specifically for a famine? So Amar Rebbe Shimon Levi, it means also that the Navi is telling them, Im karatam levavchem b'tshuva, if you rip your hearts in tshuva, if you sincerely did tshuva and rip the bad ways out of your heart, einatam kodem b'gdechem, loyal b'nechem, loyal b'neseichem, then you won't have to rip your clothes, Rahman al-Fan, for the death of a son or a daughter. Rather, you'll be able to trust in the Eidishter. Lama, and why can you trust in the Eidishter? What, who says maybe it's too late? No, ki chanun v'nachum hu, as the Navi continues. Hashem is gracious and merciful. Erech apayim, he's patient, v'rav chesed, and full of chesed, v'nicham ala ra, and Hashem and Hashem will regret, so to speak, the evil that he was planning to do, and so to speak, change his mind. So therefore, in other words, you always know there's another chance. And in the mornings, actually, now we're currently in the middle of before Shacharis. We sit together a few minutes and learn a piece of a Maimor Chassidus. Currently, we're learning something from Maimonim Kunshreisin Beis, a Maimor of the Friedrich Rebbe Shuvah Yisrael, where he brings from several different Mefarshim. When it says Ki Imcha Slicha Laman Tivore, you have to ask, what does it mean? Hashem forgives, and therefore he's going to be feared. On the face of it, isn't it the other way around? If Hashem forgives, a person is more likely to say, okay, I can get away with it over and over. So a number of them, if he brings it, if Friedrich ever brings it, a number of them, Mefarshim explain, it's something along the lines of what it's saying in the Gemara over here. Without the Eidishter forgiving, a person might figure, you know what, I did Averis, forget about it, I'm a goner, I may as well live it up, like we found, like we learned in the Gemara, like we learned in Chagiga about Acher. When we find that the Eidishter is forgiving and merciful and so forth, then a person realizes, you know what, I do have another chance, so it motivates him to do tshuva. There's, by the way, a story in that connection with one of the Talmidim of the Mizrachi Magid. I can't now remember which one it was, where they asked him, what did he accomplish? I think it was Reb Mendel Horodoker. Where they asked him at one point, what did he accomplish in a certain town? He says, I came there and I found that the clothes were torn and the hearts were whole, and I switched it around. Like the Gemara is saying over here. The Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel bar Nachman b'shem Rav Yechanan, erech af ein ksiv kan. Now, it doesn't say in the pasuk that Hashem is erech af. Now, the word af all by itself can mean anger. So erech af by itself would mean that Hashem is slow to anger. Erech apayim, but it's apayim in the plural, which means there's two ways in which Hashem is patient. Marich ruchay ad shalei yigbeh. First of all, Hashem is patient and waits before he even starts collecting and dispensing the punishment. And number two, his chaligbeh, even once Hashem has begun with the punishment, marich ruchoi v'goyva, Hashem is patient with the dispensing of the punishment itself, and does it only a little bit at a time, so as not to completely destroy the person or the kehila. So that's erech hapayim in two ways. So the Gemara continues, something that we also learned, that we learned a couple of weeks back in Yerushalmi Shkolim. Omer Rav Chanina, man de omer de Rachmana Vatron, a person who thinks that Hashem is willing to let things go, like in other words, I did an Avera, okay, big deal, Hashem is willing to overlook it, Yivatron b'nei ma'oi, his kishkis deserve to be let loose. Which can mean that he would have loose bowels. It can also mean, that we talked about then, that one of the Mephoroshim explains, based on a Gemara in Cholim that talks about how the kishkes have to be arranged in precisely certain positions in the body, and if they're not, then a person or an animal can't live with them switched around. So Yivatrin b'nei me'oi means his kishkes will come out and they won't be able to be put back in the proper way, and therefore he won't have long to live, Rahman al-Islam. The point is, a person shouldn't think that way. El Amarich Rufa, you should realize the Eibishter is patient, but ultimately he collects what's coming to him. In other words, a person shouldn't think, okay, I did an Aveda, big deal. Hashem is a nice guy, he'll let it slide. No, Hashem is not letting it slide. Hashem is patient in giving you a chance to do tshuva, but there has to be some kind of consequence, either tshuva or some other kind of consequence. We talked about there something that Eitz Yosef brings from Sifrei Musar in that connection, because every Avera creates a pagam in the world, and therefore something has to happen with that pagam. Either it has to be cleaned up with tshuva or with whatever. But that's the idea. In other words, a person shouldn't just think that Hashem is mevater, Hashem doesn't care, basically. That would be very dangerous, because then a person can think that he can get away with all kinds of Averas. Amar Rav Levi, so Rav Levi says, further, let's understand this word, Erech HaPayim, Mao Erech HaPayim, Rachik Ragis. It means that Hashem keeps anger far away from him. The anger that Hashem uses as his shliach to punish people, Hashem keeps it, so to speak, far away from him. Like, it's not available to Hashem at a moment's notice. Moshe Lamelech Shoyle Shnei Legiones Koshin. So it's like a king who had two very strong legions where he has them available anytime that their job is, among other things, whenever there's a rebellion, whenever people are rebelling or uprising against the king, then their job is to go and put down the rebellion. But the king says to himself, if these two legions stay with me in the capital city, what's going to happen if the people in the city anger me, if they act in a disrespectful way? Right away, these two legions are trained for this kind of thing. They're going to go wipe out the whole city. So the king thinks to himself, I'm going to send these two legions further away. This way, if the people in the town and the people in the capital city are angering me, by the time, it's going to take time to send for these two legions, it's going to take time for them to come. Meanwhile, the people in the town will realize that they did wrong, and they'll come and appease me, and then ask mechilav ani makabel piyusam, and then I'll be able to accept their appeasement, their apologies and their whatever else they would do for having acted wrongly. So
the nimshal
is tach omer akadosh baruch hu af vechema beis malachei chabalahim. So the same way, there are two malachei chabala, two malachim of destruction called af and chema, which are various aspects of Hashem's anger. Imhem dorim imi tan. So Hashem is saying, so to speak, if they live together with me, actually stir machis and moisi, then whenever the Jewish people anger me, vehem ondim aleim machal moisam, then af and chema are immediately going to go and do their job that they're trained to do, that the Eibishter created them for, and destroy them. Ela harianim shalchem derech rechoka. So Hashem says, I'm keeping af and chema far away from me. She machis and moisi Yisrael. If the Jewish people anger me, by the time it's going to take time to send for them, and it's going to take time for them to show up, and meanwhile, the Jewish people have a chance to do tshuva, and I'll be able to accept their tshuva. The Bavli expresses this in a different way. There's a Gemara, I think, in Brachas that says that various malachim are able to fly with a certain number of flaps of their wings. So like Malach Michal is able to traverse the whole world with one flap of his wings, and then Malach Gavriel with two. I don't remember all the numbers that it says over there, but the point is, in other words, that you have the Malach HaMavis, for example, it takes generally eight flaps of his wings to get me so far than the surface. So like, so to speak, there's a built-in delay so he doesn't come right away on the spot and carry out the verdict, carry out the sentence.
Getting the upgrade, the F-35.
What?
Not getting the upgrade.
He's not getting the upgrade. Well, more to the point, in other words, that he's not taking a direct flight on the Zorgan. Yeah.
It's a
safety mechanism, basically. Ahu dichtiv, thus you have the Pasuk expresses this idea. The Pasuk describes the destructive forces in context. The Pasuk is describing about that Poras and Modai who are going to come to destroy the nation of Babel, but the kingdom of Babel. But we see in that Pasuk also, we still have this idea that the destructive forces are described. Me'eretz Merchok, they're coming from a far distance, from the ends of the heavens, the Gomer. So, there we're talking about in connection with Babel, where the Eibishter doesn't necessarily give them that break, but the point is we see this idea that the Eibishter keeps the destructive forces, so to speak, at arm's length, so they're not available on the spot.
It's like the missiles of the Iranians.
Yeah. Yeah, we have enough time to react to them. Yeah. Not only that, Rabbi Yitzchok says not just that Hashem keeps them, so to speak, far away, but he also locks up in front of them. So like now you have to kavyochol as if like fumble for the keys and go and unlock it. You have another pasuk also describing the downfall of Babel. Pasuk Hashem es otzorei. Hashem has opened up his treasury. Vayotzeis klei zamoi, and he took out from there the tools of his anger, the weapons of his anger. And in Bavli Chagiga, we learned about that one meaning of that is there's one of the seven heavens that contains the weapons that Hashem uses to punish people. And then we said over there that they have locks, so that they have locks and doors based on this pasuk. But now we're saying, in other words, that these Malachi Chabala themselves are kept behind doors. Adu posach. So as he's opening, adu is like duhu in Bavli. A lot of times a hey drops out in Yerushalmi. Adu posach. As he's opening one door, adu torich. And by the time he closes the other door, rachmoi krivin. Meanwhile, Hashem's rachmonus comes closer. and therefore it has time to overtake before the Malachi Kabbalah are let loose. So further, the Gemara says in this connection, Tony B'Shem Rav Meir, here's another pasuk that expresses this idea as well. The Navi Micha says, Kine Hashem Yotzim in Mekoymai. Hashem is coming out of his place. Now, what place? Meloi Chalaretz Kvodi. Hashem doesn't have a place. So, Yotzalem in Midah L'Midah means Hashem is, so to speak, going out from one Midah to another. Yotzaloi in Midah Sadin. Hashem is leaving the so to speak, the space of Midah Sadin, or Bala the Midah Sarachmim. Now, Yisrael is coming into a Midah Sarachmim on the Jewish people. So there's a medrash that expresses the same kind of thing in a similar vein. It says, for example, on Rosh Hashanah, the Eibishter sits on the Kiseh Shel Din, and then when we blow a shofar, then the Eibishter gets up, then he gets up from the Kiseh Shel Din and sits on the Kiseh Shel Rachmim. So all of these are meant to express the idea, in other words, that the Eibishter is patient and he wants as much as possible to exercise Midas Rachmim towards us. Getting back to the matter of fasts and tshuva that they do for when there's no rain or when there's other tzaras. Omer Rav, kol tainis she'ein nasas ketikna. Whenever you have a tainis that's not done properly, where again the people are not doing proper tshuva, Olai ha'akotzav Omer, the posset criticizes to fast and says, Nosna olai v'koila, Hashem says, they put their voices up against me, al kain sinei siha, therefore I hate her. So like, in other words, they're davening loudly and saying anenu and so on and so forth, but if they're not accompanying it with what a fast is supposed to be, then Eibishter just says, I don't like that kind of thing. Further on this topic of getting back to this topic of Hashem, so to speak, changing his mind from one midah to another and going from midas adin to midas arachmim. Ksiv loy ish keil v'yichadze v'gomer. Bilam says in one of his nevuos, Hashem is not a man that he should lie. When Hashem says something, he's going to do it. Now, you have the pasuk goes like this: Lo ish keil v'yichazev. Hashem is not a man that he should lie. Uven adam v'yisnecham. On the simple meaning of the pasuk, it means Hashem is not a person that he should change his mind. Ahu amav lo yaseh. What Hashem could it be that Hashem would say something and he wouldn't do it? The dibur v'lo yikimenach. Could Hashem speak something and not accomplish it? So, in the simple meaning of the pasuk, Bilam is saying, since Hashem has decided to bench the Jewish people and not to curse them, then I have no ability against that. Here the Gemara is going to douch in the pasuk as if it's saying that sometimes Hashem does change his mind. In fact, you can read the pasuk, Lo ish keil v'yichazev, uven adam yisnecham. You can read, for example, the pasuk, uven adam yisnecham. In the simple meaning, the word loy at the beginning of the pasuk goes on the next part as well. Evan Ezra, for example, calls that moshech atzmei v'acher imo. The word loy goes on both parts of the sentence. But the Gemara is going to doubt it as if it's saying, uven adam miyisnecham, that Hashem can allow himself to change his mind because of a person. So Rav Shmuel bar Nachman v'Rabbanan. So how do we understand the pasuk? So Rav Shmuel bar Nachman and the Chachamim disagree. Rav Shmuel bar Nachman omar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu oimer lasis loy toiva. When Hashem decides, when Hashem says that he's going to do good for a person or for the Jewish people collectively, lo yish keil v'yichazev. Then you have the part of the pasuk. Hashem is not a man that he should lie. If Hashem said he's going to do good, it's definitely going to happen. But omer lasis ra. But if Hashem says he's going to do something bad to a person, then as the pasuk says, as the pasuk continues, hahu omer v'lo yaseh. Hashem has said it, but he's not going to do it. In other words, it's not a rhetorical question. Ahu omer v'lo yaseh. It's a statement. There is a time that a Ahu omer v'lo yaseh v'dibur, and that Hashem will speak v'lo yikimena, and he doesn't actually make it happen. Because Hashem will, so to speak, change his mind, and because the person did tshuva, or because Hashem is having rachmanas on him, or being patient with him, or whatever the idea is. We know this comes up lahalocha as well. When a Navi says a nevuah that something good is going to happen, it has to come true. And if not, then he's a Navi sheker. Whereas if he says that something bad is going to happen and doesn't happen, doesn't mean anything, because it can mean the people did tshuva, or it can mean that the Eibishter decided to be more patient or whatever. You find a dialogue like that that Amman brings. You find a dialogue like that between Yirmiyahu Navi and Hananiah ben Azur. Hananiah ben Azur, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, was originally a true Navi. But then he became a false Navi. First he plagiarized the Nevuah of Yirmiyah, and then he became an out-and-out false Navi. So, and he's saying good nevuah, that within 2 years, the kalim of the Bais HaMikdash that have already been taken to Babel are going to be returned, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to have his downfall and so forth. And Yirmiyah says to him, let me explain something to you. I'm saying nevuah is about bad things that are going to happen. The churban, the gullus, if those don't come true, doesn't mean that I'm a false Navi. It means Hashem changed his mind for one reason or another. But you're saying nevuah is for good. If they don't come true, then we know you're a false Navi. Anyway. So that's Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman's way of understanding the pasuk, lo yishkel v'yachaziv, when it comes to doing good things. But ha'hu omer v'lo yaseh v'dibur v'lo yikimena, when Hashem has decided on something bad. V'rabbanan amri, the Chum learned the pasuk different. Lo yishhu sha'osev dvarav shokeo keilu einon, isn't there a person who made Hashem's words as if they weren't? Namely, when Moshe says to Hashem, Loma Hashem, Yechra Abchaba Mecha, Hashem, why is your anger going to flare against your people? In other words, to hear Hashem is saying, he's threatening to wipe out the Jewish people, and who stops him from that is Moshe Rabbeinu, a boss of the dumb. So in other words, that part of the pasuk we understand rhetorically. Loi ish kale, isn't there a case where there was a man who stood up against Hashem, the chaziv, and caused that Hashem is, so to speak, not telling the truth, that what Hashem said is not going to happen? Or then Adam be snecham, and when the pasuk continues, a human being that he would regret. Loi ben Amram who, isn't it none other than Ben Amram, Moshe Rabbeinu? The word Adam particularly means a tzaddik for kosher. So you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who himself is a great tzaddik and is the son of a great tzaddik Amram. Who made Hashem, so to speak, regret and retract what he was planning to do, as the pasuk says, that Hashem regretted the evil that he was going to do to his people. So that Rabbanan understand the pasuk. Even the loyish kel v'yachaziv, in other words, Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman is taking all of it as statements. Loyish kel v'yachaziv, when it's good. When it's for bad. The Rabbanan are learning the whole pasuk as a series of rhetorical questions. Loi ish keil v'chazev, wasn't there a case where a man, Moshe Rabbeinu, caused Hashem, so to speak, to lie? Or Ben Adam v'yisnecham, wasn't there a case where Ben Adam caused Hashem to regret what he was going to do? So, either way, the point is, in other words, that the al-derech like tzaddik goes if HaKadosh Baruch Hu makayim, or more like the, like as the Gemara phrases it, that Hashem says, I make a gzera, and then the tzaddik comes in as mevatelet. Amar Rav Abahu, so in this connection, Rav Abahu points out, in Yom Lecha Adam, here's another way of understanding the pasuk. Im Yom Lecha Adam Keil Ani, if a person is going to say to you, I'm a god, and we have a number of examples of it in history. We have Chiram Melech Tzur, we have Parai, in later times you have Yoshka. Anyway, Mechaziv, who you should know he's lying. So that's another meaning of Loi Ish Keil V'Yechaziv. If Loi Ish Keil, a person cannot be a god, and if he claims that he is V'Yechaziv, then you know he's lying. Ben Adam, and if he tells you I'm a Ben Adam, I'm a son of a distinguished person, also Sofer Litos, but in the end he's going to regret it, because you're going to find out that he's not what he's claiming to be. He's not a son of any great person at all. Shani Ola Shemayim, and if he claims I'm going to be able to go up to Shemayim, like the Dora Flogger of this week's parasha, Hahu Omer V'lo Yaseh V'Dibur V'lo Yikimena, then you should know, as the pasuk continues, he may say that, but he's not going to do it. He may try to speak it, but he's not going to be able to accomplish it. In other words, Rav Abahu is understanding yet another layer of meaning in this pasuk, that although the whole pasuk is not talking about what Hashem does via the Jewish people, but rather about what a person claims that he's Hashem and that he has all these great capabilities, the Eibush is going to put him in his place and show that he has no such capabilities at all. Further on in the perek, it starts talking about, you have the extra six brachas, we learned about it in the Bavli and Tainus as well, about the extra six brachas that they would say on these fast days between Re'ena von Yenu and Rafa'enu. Nowadays we say Anenu in that same position, and the Chazan says Anenu in that same position in Shemoneh Esrei. And each of the brachas ends with Misha Ona, so we say Misha Ona to so and so, who Yana Eschen Hashem should answer us as well. We say, We have a paragraph in Slichus that takes that and expands it much further. Mishana Lavrom of Inamahamriya, Mishana Yitzchak Pinekshin Agenagam Azbeach, and the Mishnah only has seven of them, one extra that's added to the A and six extra ones. You also have the Piyot that we say Yom Kippur afternoon in Mincha, Keil No Rafana, where each stanza of it also ends with something like that. Anenu Kshanisa Lavrom of Inamahamriya, Anenu Kshanisa Lavasenu Ayam, so on and so forth. Anyway, so one of them is Mishanas Avisenu Al Yamsuf, the Ebishter who answered our ancestors by the Yamsuf should answer our tefillas today. So in that connection, the Gemara brings, which are the famous Medrash, about what happened before Kriyas Yamsuf when everybody is worried about the Mitzrayim are about to overtake them. Arba Kitas Nasu Avisenu Al Yam. Our ancestors divided up into four groups by the Yamsuf. Achas Emeres Nipel LaYam. One says we should fall into the sea. Va'achas Emeres Nasi LaMitzrayim. The other group says we should return to Mitzrayim or give up. Va'achas Emeres Nasi Imon Mochama. Another one says let's fight against them. Va'achas Emeres Vaveach Kineg them. And the fourth one says we'll cry and shout out against them. It can mean shout, like to scare them. It can mean shout in davening. So the ones who are about to jump into the sea, Moshe tells them, stand firm and you'll see Hashem's salvation. Moshe tells them, you've seen Mitzrayim today, but you're never going to see them again. You think you're going to fight against the Mitzrayim, Hashem is going to fight on your behalf. The ones who said, we're going to cry out against them. So Moshe says to them, you be quiet, and Hashem will do it on your behalf. There's a famous sicha in Chelek Gimel for Beshalach, where the Rebbe analyzes the deeper meaning behind these four groups. Each of them had an idea in Avoida. Each of them has a degree of Kabbalah soul, but they're taking it in different ways. The ones who are saying Nipala Yam are saying basically we're going to throw ourselves into the Yam of Torah and ignore the whole world. And Moshe is telling them that's not what the Ebishter wants from you. The ones who are saying Nachsel Mitznayim are saying we're going to have to give up. Look, we live in a Gashmiastika world. We're going to have to give up and accept that the Goyish world, that the Gashmiastika world has its limitations and whatever. And Moshe tells them that's not what they should put you in the world for. The ones who are saying Nase Mon Mochama are saying we're going to fight against them. Moshe says that's all fine and good, but you have more than Mochama to do. You have to bring a course into the world, not just fight against the evil that's in the world. And then Saveach Kineg them. We're going to daven. Moshe tells them that's all fine and good, but you need more than davening. You need Maisi B'Poil. And so ultimately the idea is, in other words, you need something beyond Mesiras Nefer. You need something beyond Kabbalah Soil even. You need Kabbalah Soil, but you also need to be working B'Koyach Atzman. And that's Moshe tells them you go into the Yamsuf at Hashem's command, and he's gonna do the rest for you. Oh, the guy with the guy couldn't make his rent, and then the potter.
And then they bought the Baal Shem Tov. So they asked Baal Shem Tov, why did he knock on the stick?
Yeah, I'm not familiar. Okay, all right. Anyway. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ula, Chavod Tishrei. When Chazal describe the Yemos HaMashiach, so they go on at great length and describe all the gashmiistic good that's gonna happen in those times, including that on the day a person plants, on that day he's gonna produce fruit, and Asida Eretz Yisrael Shatotzi Gul Skoris, the Eretz Yisrael is gonna produce ready to eat loaves of bread and ready to eat clothing. So a deeper meaning in that is that Yemos HaMashiach, Avoida is going to be in a way of Chakika Me'ever El Ever, like the writing on the Luchos that was carved through and penetrated through from one side to the other. And it'll penetrate and be poil on all of a person's koichas and everything that a person does, and really into everything, into every entity and every metzius in the world. So therefore, at that point, there's not going to be like this. Nowadays, you have a person does his part to plant, and it takes months for the crop to grow. Now, la'asid lava, you won't have that. The flow of alakos will immediately come. But the same day as a person plants, it'll produce pedras, because the gashmias will be united with its shodash and mocker, with it, which is the dvar habayim.
Oh, yeah.
Halachas. We're in the middle of dealing with halachas of a fire on Shabbos, Rahman al-Fan. So Sforim, you're allowed to save from a fire or a flood or anything like that. Those kind you're allowed to eat, though, unlike some of the other things that it mentioned earlier, for example, food and things like, and clothing, where you can only take them to a place where you have a proper Eruv with you. You would be allowed even to take it to a Chotzer or a Mavui where you didn't make an Eruv Chatzeres before Shabbos, as long as you have up the proper Surah Sapesach or Lechi or Koto, whatever it takes, as long as it's enclosed in such a way where you could have made an Eruv Chatzeres before Shabbos. So in other words, let's say, to put it in terms of our houses in Crown Heights, we're often like you have a driveway between two houses, and the driveway is open to the street. If you have a sort of a Pesach over there, then it means, in other words, that you could have, if you had put down your matzah beforehand, as people usually do before Pesach, and made an Erev Chatzeres between you and your neighbor, then you'd actually be allowed to carry in that driveway on Shabbos. And Yossi, you didn't, you're not, but nevertheless, at least the hardware is there, so to speak, only the software is missing, if you want to put it that way. Therefore, to save Sfarim from a fire or flood or what have you, you would be allowed to. As far as having a goy carry them, not, you could even take them through Rosh Hashanah.